Hello and welcome to Exploring the Tragedy of Antony by Robert Garnier and done into English by Mary Sidney, or Mary Herbert, the Countess of Pembroke. We're currently producing a full cast audio production of this play as chosen by our wonderful patrons. You can choose future work by joining us on patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. You also get all of these episodes early. This exploration is based on a series of one-to-one conversations with readers as we try to get to grips with this play. It's fair to say, we get things wrong in a first read, and we dive down roads which we will not take, but also we find things that are really interesting. In this episode, we're looking at Act 3, Mark Antony and his mate Lucilius, followed by the final appearance of this particular chorus. Other choruses are available. This isn't a full exposition of the text. If you want a more considered look, come back in a few months for the spoilers episodes. First up, we look at Antony and Lucilius, with the actor playing Antony, Haydon McCabe, his first viewing of the text, and then, to confuse you, a look at the two parts again, myself reading Antony and irregular Alan Scott reading Lucilius. I, myself, am Robert Crichton Still. You basically have two and a teeny bit scenes, effectively. Originally, wouldn't you just have two
act
scenes?
Three.
So Act 3, this is...
Mark Antony, Lucilius.
And Lucilius. So this is...
What's going on here, our kid?
You are... Well, basically, it's a continuation, and he's there to try and slap you into some sense.
Okay.
He's one of your trusted aide-de-camps who's been with you since... As far as your character is concerned, someone else has just come into the room.
Yeah.
Really, the bridge, the stuff that's happened in between, as far as you're concerned,
doesn't care.
There's none of that matters. This is basically that we've just whisked off to another part of Alexandria. We've now whisked back to you, and this is you contemplating your suicide. Basically, this is what this scene is. I'm Lucille.
Righto, Lucille, sole comfort of my bitter case. The only trust. The only hope I have in last despair. Oh, is not this the day that death should me of life and love bereave? What wait I for that have no refuge left, but am sole remnant of my fortune left? All leave me, fly me, none. No, not of them, hang on, all leave me, fly me, none, no, not of them, which, all right, I've got it, all leave me, fly me, none, no, not of them, which of my greatness, greatest good received, stands with my fall. They see me as now ashamed that hitherfore they did me aught regard. They draw them back, showing they followed me, not to partake my harms, but cozen me.
In this our world nothing is steadfast found, in vain he hopes, who here his hopes doth ground.
Yet naught afflicts me, nothing kills me so. Oh, as that I so my Cleopatra see, practice with Caesar, and to him transport my flame, her love, more dear than life to me.
So the first part of your despair is, like, all the people around you have started backing away.
Right.
I'm the only person here.
And
then you're going, oh, she's going to go off to Caesar. That is basically what my next line is. Believe it not, to higher heart she bears, to princely thoughts.
Too wise a head she wears, too much inflamed with greatness, evermore gaping, for our great empire's government. Hang on.
She wants more power, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was just wanting to get the scan.
Yeah.
Too wise a head she wears. Too wise a head she wears, too much I got it. Too wise a head she wears, too much inflamed with greatness, evermore gaping for our great empire's government.
So long time you her constant love have tried.
But still with me good fortune did abide.
Her changed love, what token makes you know? How do you know she's changed her mind, mate? Come on.
Pelusium?
Yeah, I think Pelusium, we're not sure. Pronunciation, but it's just basically, that was the land battle,
the
Actium was the sea battle.
Pelusium lost. and Actaeon overthrown, both by her fraud. My well-appointed fleet and trusty soldiers in my quarrel armed, whom she, false she, instead of my defence, came to persuade, to yield them to my foe. Such honour Tyre done, such welcome given. Their long close talks I neither knew, nor would, and treacherous wrong Alexis hath me done. Witness too well her perjured love to me. But you, O gods, if any faith regard, with sharp revenge her faithless change reward.
You can never trust an Alexa. You never know who's listening.
No.
We've got to be careful of Alexis.
Alexis, yes.
The dole she made upon our overthrow, her realm given up for refuge to our men, her poor attire when she devoutly kept the solemn day of her nativity, against the cost and prodigal expense, showed when she did your birthday celebrate, do plain enough her heart unfeigned prove, equally touched, you loving as you love.
Ah, well. Be her love to me, or false or true, once in my soul a curious wound I feel. I love, nay, burn in fire of her love. Each day, each night, her image haunts my mind, herself my dreams, and still I tired am, and still am with burning pincers nipped. Extreme my harm, yet sweeter to my sense than boiling torch of jealous torment's fire. This grief, nay, rage, in me such stir doth keep, and thorns me still, both when I wake and sleep. Take Caesar conquest, take my goods, take ye honour to be lord of the earth alone. My sons, my life bent headlong to misshapes. No force, so not my Cleopatra take, so foolish I cannot her forget. Though better were I banished her, my thought, like to the sick, whose throat the fever's fire hath vehemently with thirst drought inflamed. Drinks steel, or be the drink he still desires, but nothing else but fuel to his flame. He cannot rule himself. His health's respect yieldeth to his distempered stomach's heat.
Leave of this love that thus renews your woe. She's not worth it, mate. She's not worth it.
I do my best, but cannot do so.
Think how you have so brave a captain been, and now are by this vain affection fallen.
The ceaseless thought of my felicity plunges me more in this adversity. For nothing so a man in ill torments as who to him his good state represents. This makes my rack, my anguish, and my woe equal unto the hellish passions grow. Oh, when I to mind my happy puissance call, which erst I had by warlike conquest won, and that good fortune which me never left, which hard disaster now hath me bereft. With terror tremble all the world I made at my sole word, as rushes in the streams and waters will. I conquered Italy, I conquered Rome. Oh, that nation so redoubt I bear. Meanwhile, besieging Mutina, two consul armies for my ruin brought, bathed in their blood, by their deaths witnessing my force and skill in matters martial. To wreck thy uncle, unkind Caesar, I with blood of enemies the banks embrued of stained Enipius, hindered his course, stopped with heaps of piled carcasses. When Cassius and Brutus ill betide marched against us, by us twice put to fight. By us twice put to flight. But by my soul conduct. For all the time Caesar, heartsick with fear and fever, lay. Who knows it not? And how, by every one, fame of the fact was given to me alone. There sprang the love, the never-changing love, wherein my heart hath since to yours been bound. There was it, my Lucille, your Brutus saved, and for your Brutus Antony you found. Better my happy's gaining such a friend than in subduing such an enemy. Now former virtue, dead, doth me forsake. Fortune engulfs me in extreme distress. She turns from me her smiling countenance, casting on me mishap upon mishap. Left and betrayed by thousand friends. One of my suit, but you, Lucille, are left, remaining to me steadfast as a tower in holy love, in spite of fortune's blasts. But if of any god my voice be heard, and be not vainly scattered in the heavens, such goodness shall not gloryless be lost, but coming ages still thereof shall boast.
Men in their friendship ever should be one, and never aught with fickle fortune shake, which still removes, nor will, nor knows the way, her rolling bowl in one sure state to stay, wherefore we ought as borrowed things receive, the goods light she lends us to pay again. Not hold them sure, nor on them build our hopes, as on such goods as cannot fail and fall. But think again, nothing is durable, virtue except our never-failing host. So bearing sail when favouring winds do blow, as frowning tempests may as least dismay, when they on us do fall, not over-glad with good estate, nor over-grieved with bad, resist mishap.
Alas, it is too strong. Mishaps oft-times are by some comfort borne, but these, me, whose weights oppress my heart, too heavy lie, no hope can them relieve. There rests no more but that with cruel blade for lingering death a hasty way be made.
Caesar, as heir unto his father's state, so will your father's goodness imitate to you would, whom he knows allied in blood, allied in marriage, ruling equally the empire with him, and with him making war, have purged the earth of Caesar's murderers. You, into portions parted, have the world, even like co-heirs their heritages part, and now, with one accord, so many years in quiet peace, both have your charges ruled.
Blood and alliance nothing do prevail, so will his to cool the thirst of hot ambitious breasts. The son his father hardly can endure, brother his brother, in one common realm so fervent this desire to command. Such jealousy it kindleth in our hearts. Sooner will men permit another should love her they love. What, hang on. Sooner will men permit another should love her they love.
Yeah, so that run sort of runs on, doesn't it?
Sooner will men permit another should love her they love. Then where? Sooner will men permit another should love her they love. Then wear the crown they wear. All laws it breaks. Turns all things upside down. Amity, kindred, naught so holy is, but it defiles. A monarchy to gain, none cares which way, so he may it but obtain.
Suppose he monarch be, and that this world no more acknowledge sundry emperors than Rome him only fear, and that he join the east with west, and both at once do rule. Why should he not permit you, peaceably discharged of charge and empire's dignity, private to live reading philosophy and learned Greece, Spain, Asia, any land.
Never will he his empire think assured, while in this world Mark Antony shall live. Sleepless suspicion, pale distrust, cold fear always to prince's company to bear, bread of reports. Always to prince's company to bear, bread of reports. Reports which night and day perpetual guests from court go not array.
He hath not slain your brother Lucius, nor shortened hath the age of Lepidus, albeit both into his hands were fallen, and he with wrath against the both inflamed, yet one, as lord, in quiet rest doth bear the greatest sway in gentle Iberia. The other, with his gentle prince, retains of highest priest the sacred dignity.
He fears not them. Their feeble force he knows.
He fears no vanquished, overfilled with woes.
Oh, fortune may change again.
A downcast foe can hardly rise, which once is brought so low.
All that I can is done. For last essay, when all means failed, I to entreaty fell. Coward creature. Once again repulsed of combat, I unto him proffer made. Though he in prime, and I by feeble age, mightily weakened both in force and skill, yet could not he his coward heart advance, basely afraid to try so praiseful chance. This makes me plain, makes me myself accuse. Fortune in this her spiteful force doth use against my grey hairs. In this unhappy I repine at heavens in my haps pitiless. A man, a woman, both in might and mind, in Mars his school, who never lessons learned, should me repulse, chase, overthrow, destroy me of such fame, bring to so low an ebb. Ah, Alcide's blood, whom from my infancy with happy prowess crowned have my praise, witness thou, Gaul, unused to servile yoke. Thou valiant Spain, you fields of Thessaly, with millions of mourning cries bewailed, twice watered now with blood of Italy.
Witness may Afrique and of conquered world all four quarters witness may be, for in what part of earth inhabited hungry praise have you not ensign spread?
Thou knowest rich Egypt of my deeds, fair and foul subject. Egypt, thou knowest how I behaved me fighting for thy king, which I regained him his rebellious realm, against his foes in battle showing force, and after fight in victory remorse. Yet if to bring my glory to the ground, fortune had made me overthrow by one of greater force, or better skill than I. One of those captains feared so of old, Camille, Marcellus, worthy Scipio, this late great Caesar, honour of our state, or that great Pompey, aged, grown in arms. Thou after harvest of a wealth of men made in 100 battles, fights, assaults, my body...
Where? Through pierced with push, so...
Okay, through, it's through.
Through.
My body, through pierced with push of pike, had vomited my blood. In blood my life, in midst of millions, fellow in my fall. The less her wrong, the less should my woe. Nor should she pain, nor I complain me so. No, whereas I should have died in arms and vanquished oft new enemies, should have armed new battles, given and rather lost with me all this whole world submitted unto me. A man who never saw enlaced pikes with bristled points against his stomach bent, who fears the field and hides him cowardly dead at the very noise the soldiers make. His virtue, fraud, deceit, malicious guile. His virtue, fraud, deceit, malicious guile. His arms, the arts that false Ulysses used, known at Modena, where the consuls both death wounded were, and wounded by his men to get their army, war with it, to make it against his faith, against his country soil. Of Lepidus, which to his succours came, to honour whom he was by duty bound, the empire he usurped, corrupting first with baits and bribes the most part of his men, yet me hath overcome, and made his prey, and state of Rome with me hath overcome. Strange. One discordant act at Actium, the earth subdued, my glory had obscured. For since, as one whom heaven at wrath attained, with fury caught, and more than furious vexed with my evils, I never more had care. I never more had care my armies lost, or lost renamed to repair. I did not more resist.
All wars affairs, but battles most daily have their success. Now good, now ill, and though that fortune have great force and power in every worldly thing, rule all, do all, have all things fast enchained into the circle of her turning wheel, yet seems it more than any practice else she doth frequent Bellona's bloody trade, and that her favour, wavering as the wind, her greatest power therein dost oftenest show, whence grows. We daily see who in their youth get honour there, do lose it at their age, vanquished by some less warlike than themselves, whom yet a meaner man shall overthrow. Her use is not to lend us still her hand, but sometimes headlong back again to throw, when by her favour she hath us extolled unto the top of highest happiness.
Well ought I curse within my grieved soul, lamenting day and night, this senseless love, whereby my fair enticing foe entrapped my headless reason, could no more escape. Oh, it was not fortune's ever-changing face. It was not destiny's changeless violence forced my mishap. Alas, who doth not know they make, nor mar, nor anything can do for things which men so fear?
That should be fortune.
Oh, well, I've got four things.
Yeah, there's several little errors I've noticed. That's fortune, though.
Oh, wait. Fortune which men so fear, adore, detest, is him to chance whose cause unknown doth rest. Although of times the cause is well perceived, but not the effect, the same that was conceived. Pleasure, naught else, the plague of this our life. Our life, which still a thousand plagues pursue, alone hath me this strange disaster spun, fallen from a soldier to a chamberer, careless of virtue, careless of all praise. Nay, as the fatted swine in filthy mire, with glutted heart I wallowed in delights, all thoughts of honour trodden underfoot. So I me lost, for finding this sweet cup pleasing my taste, unwise I drank my fill, and though the sweetness of that poison's power, by steps I drew my former wits astray, I made my friends offended me forsake, hoped, or helped?
Helped.
Okay. I help my foes against myself to rise. I robbed my subjects, and for followers I saw myself beset with flatterers. Oh, mine idle arms, fair wrought with spider's work, my scattered men without the ensign strayed. Caesar meanwhile, who never would have dared to cope with me suddenly despised, took heart to fight, and hoped for victory. On one so gone, who glory had foregone.
And because we're short of time, I'm just going to skip to the last line of my speech. The hurtful works of pleasures here behold.
The wolf is not so hurtful to the fold, frost to the grapes, to ripened fruits the rain, as pleasure is to princes full of pain.
Now, accidentally, we skipped two lines in the script, so you're going to have to read from mine. There needs no proof, but by the Assyrian king on whom that monster woeful rack did bring.
There needs no proof, but by unhappy I, who lost my empire, honour life thereby.
I have another long speech, and then you have your final little oration. More and more increased day by day, scorned his weak heart, become a mistress play.
In only this, like Heracles, am I. In this I prove me of his lineage right. In this himself, his deeds I show in this. In this, naught else, my ancestor he is. But go we. Die I must, and with brave end conclusion make of all foregoing harms. Die I must. I must a noble death, a glorious death unto my succour call. I must deface the shame of time abused. I must adorn the wanton loves I used with some courageous act. That my last day, by mine own hand, my spots may wash away. Come, dear Lucille. Oh, alas, why weep you thus? This mortal lot is common to us all. We must all die. Each doth in homage owe unto that god that shared the realms below. Oh, sigh no more. Alas, appease your woes, for by your grief, my grief more eager grows.
And that's the primary role over. There is a messenger who turns up later on who says... it's not really properly formatted, so I can't show you. But basically, a messenger comes on the next act and says, Mark Antony killed himself. And there's a few lines of dialogue that he reports, but we will record
it. We'll kill it as me doing it.
So that was Haydon McCabe grappling Antony. Now I have another look at this scene with Alan Scott reading Lucilius.
We are looking at... Act 3 of the tragedy of Antony with Marcus Antonius and Lucilius. And we're just going to be reading through this to get a sense of the play for the future lucky people who will actually be recording this with me later in the year. Potentially in a few weeks' time, some of them. So this is sort of hopefully useful for them because they can listen to this and get a sense, and I also get a better sense. Even though technically I've done this play before.
Have you?
Yeah. We did a reading of it at the Keep years and years ago. I don't like to think. I have a terrible, truly unusable recording. So this is actually quite a long scene. It is not including the chorus. It's better part of 400 lines.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not short. So this might be all we actually get through to today, but we'll see. Okay, I am reading Antonius, you are reading Lucilius.
All right.
Or Lucille. Lucille. Sole comfort of my bitter case, the only trust, the only hope I have in last despair. Is not this the day that death should me of life and love bereave? What wait I for, that have no refuge left, but am sole remnant of my fortune left? All leave me, fly me, none, no, not of them, which of my greatness greatest good received, stands with my fall. They seem as now ashamed that heretofore they did me aught regard. They draw them back, showing they followed me not to partake my harms, but cozen me.
In this our world nothing is steadfast found. In vain he hopes who here his hopes doth ground.
I'm just going to pause us there. So Mark Antony, obviously happy. Happy chap. Certain amount of, because this is post-Actium, I'm assuming.
Yes,
and
I think it is.
It's pre-suicide attempt. We don't actually see that. Trigger warning for anyone listening. Your first two lines are sort of, you know, are you trying to go? I think it's too early to actually give this a motivation, but it's sort of a non thing. It's like you're trying to get a word in edgeways, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost along the lines of, yes, boss, I agree with you, and I'm going to put it in different words.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume that Lucilius is, Lucilius is servant.
No, Lucilius. He is a
servant or an inferior anyway.
I assume one of his supporting generals or people, I assume. Let's see what the... this is where deliberately not doing any research is helpful. Why can I not find Eusilius? No note on him at all. No note as
not,
to who the hell he
clue.
Is.
Not a clue.
No, I'm sure in the histories there is a clear... He is a named person. In fact, we could probably look elsewhere. But anyway, so I'm assuming he's one of his generals under him kind of thing. I'm assuming he's not a servant, but maybe he is. He is his boy slave who's there. Mm. That's quite important for me in terms of casting to know.
Or could be his aide-de-camp.
Yeah, you know, is he an older man or a younger man? That's quite an important question I need to answer. Anyway, we will move on, because there wasn't actually really anything to talk about there. Yet naught afflicts me, nothing kills me so, as that I sow my Cleopatra see, practised with Caesar, and to him transport my flame, her love more dear than life to me.
Believe it not, too high a heart she bears, too princely thoughts.
Too wise a head she wears, too much inflamed with greatness, evermore gaping for our great empire's government.
So long time you her constant love have tried.
But still with me good fortune did abide.
Her changed love, what token makes you know?
So, obviously, Antony thinks she's turned tail to go to the other side. And you're going, nah, mate, she's good, she's with you. And you ask for proof, which Antony is now going to attempt to give you. Pelusium and Actium overthrown both by her fraud, my well-appointed fleet and trusty soldiers in my quarrel armed, whom she, false she, instead of my defence, came to persuade to yield them to my foe. Such honour
Tyre?
Could be Tyre, couldn't it? I'll put the H in. Such honour Thria done, such welcome given, their long, close talks I neither knew nor would. And treacherous wrong Alexis hath me done, witness too well her perjured love to me. But you, O gods, if any faith regard, with sharp revenge her faithless change reward. I think I'm just going to pause there. Thyrsus was appointed by Octavius to negotiate personally with Cleopatra. So that's a person, not a Tyre. Mm. And then we've got...
So what... What's the name given us in the note?
It's Thyrsus.
T-H...
S-U-S-Y-R, and then it's an S-U-S. I mean, I assume it would always be pronounced, but it's an interesting note that that's a person, not a place. And again, so it's all about people plotting.
Yeah, I mean, that might, I think actually using the name with the sus might actually make it scan slightly better as well.
Yeah, but it's also the kind of line which I would probably direct to sort of rattle through fairly
quickly.
I think it's the kind of thing, it's just simply he feels paranoid. And that's the important note.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is Anthony is obviously...
He's the person Anthony flogs. Oh, and sent back to Caesar. Ah, I know who he is now. Didn't recognise the name. I remember this incident, yes. Anyway, we shall go forward. So I've laid out my paranoid fears.
Right.
Assuage me, or whatever you plan to do.
The dole she made upon our overthrow, her realm given up for refuge to our men, her poor attire when she devoutly kept the solemn day of her nativity, again the cost and prodigal expense.
It is against. Have you only got a game?
Yeah.
It should be against.
Against the cost and prodigal expense showed when she did your birthday celebrate, do plain enough her heart unfeigned prove, equally touched, you loving as you love.
Well, be her love to me, or false or true, once in my soul a cureless wound I feel, I love may burn in fire of her love, each day, each night her image haunts my mind, herself my dreams. And still I tired am, and still I am with burning pincers nipped. Extreme my harm, yet sweeter to my sense than boiling torch of jealous torment's fire. This grief, nay, rage in me doth such stir doth keep, and thorns me still both when I wake and sleep. Take, Caesar, conquest, take my goods, take heed, the honoured to be lord of the earth alone, my son's life bent headlong to the haps, no force, so not my Cleopatra, take. Take everything except her. So foolish I cannot her forget, though better were I banished her my thought. Like to the sick whose throat the fever's fire hath vehemently with thirsty drought inflamed, drink still, all be the drink he still desires, be nothing else but fuel to his flame. He cannot rule himself, his health's respect yieldeth to this distempered stomach's heat.
Leave of this love, that thus renews your woe.
I do my best, but I cannot do so.
Think how you have so brave a captain been, and now are by this vain affection fallen.
And again, we're getting that whole thing of, you know, the stoic man kind of thing, isn't it? Coming through here. You know, be a man up. In that sort of toxic masculinity kind of way. And Anthony seems to be, he's completely lost it. I mean, I was deliberately trying to force the pace beyond the speed my tongue can quite currently get to. Because it feels like he's just running away. And Lucilius is just, calm down. Because it feels like it's gentered in that sort of way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is, it's, well, stream of consciousness before.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so I will rattle through, I feel. This is probably what's going to happen with the next speech. I think your purpose here is to ground the scene, whereas I just go...
It's trying to drag him back to reality.
Yeah. The ceaseless thought of my felicity plunges me more in this adversity, for nothing so a man in ill torments as who to him his good state represents. This makes my rack, my anguish, and my woe equal unto the hellish passions grow when I to my mind my happy puissance call, which erst I had by warlike conquest won, and that good fortune which me never left, which hard disaster now hath me bereft. With terror tremble all the world I made at my sole word, as rushes in the streams at water's will. I conquered Italy, I conquered Rome, that nation's so redoubt I bore, meanwhile besieging
Mutina, I think probably sounds better.
I bore, meanwhile besieging Mutina. two consuls' armies for my ruin brought, bathed in their blood, by their deaths witnessing my force and skill in matters martial. I used to be really good at fighting.
Mm.
To wreck my uncle, unkind Caesar, I, with blood of enemies, the banks imbrued of stained Enipus. Enipius? Enipius.
Mm.
Of stained...
A river, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know where to put the stresses on that at all. Of stained Enipus, Pius, Enipius, hindered his course, stopped with heaps of piled carcasses, when Cassius and Brutus, ill-betied, marched against us, by us twice put to flight, but by my sole conduct, for all the time Caesar, heart-sick with fear and fever lay. Who knows it not? And how by everyone fame of the fact was given to me alone. There sprang the love, the never-changing love, wherein my heart hath since to yours been bound. But there was it, my Lucille. You Brutus saved, and for your Brutus Antony you found. Better my hap in gaining such an enemy than in subduing such an enemy. Did I say enemy twice?
No.
No? Okay. Now former virtue dead doth me forsake. Fortune engulfs me in extreme distress. She turns from me her smiling countenance, casting on me mishap upon mishap, left and betrayed of thousand friends once of my suit. But you, Lucille, are left remaining to me, steadfast as a tower in holy love, in spite of fortune's blasts. You're a great bloke. You're still with me. But if of any god my voice be heard, and be not vainly scattered in the heavens, such goodness shall not gloryless be lost, but coming ages still thereof shall boast.
Men in their friendship ever should be one, and never aught with fickle fortune shake, which still removes, nor will, nor knows the way, her rolling bowl in one sure state to stay. Wherefore we ought as borrowed things receive, the goods light she lends us to pay again, not hold them sure, nor on them build our hopes, as on such goods as cannot fail and fall. But think again, nothing is durable. Virtue except our never-failing host, so bearing fail when favouring winds do blow.
Should be sail. Bearing sail? Have you got fail in yours?
Fail is what you
My
put.
My bad, I have not...
Yeah.
Converted that F. Yeah.
There's no answer to that.
Go so, from so, yeah, so.
So bearing sail when favouring winds do blow, as frowning tempests may us least dismay, when they on us do fall, not overgrieved with bad, resist mayhap, mishap.
So that's all about fortune, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's now becoming clearer the relationship that Lucilius is a... trusted adjutant.
Yes, he's
and effectively.
He's, yes, because he. Yes, yeah, so there is a sort of there is a bond, and there you know there's a reason why I'm telling you all this. It's not like this necessarily is something I'm sharing with everybody, though. To be fair, I probably am. And your advice, I mean, it's sort of deliberately a bit flat, isn't it?
The way I'm seeing it...
He's trying to bring it down.
As you said, Antony is gabbling. You know, he's taking it at absolutely breakneck pace. I see the way that Lucilius works is to actually slow the pace down. It is trying to calm him down, to bring him back to... some sort of grounding.
Yes, because it is much you know, more...
And if in the process he's sounding boring, well, I think actually that's probably part of it.
Yes, it's not a long speech, and Lucilius doesn't have... He does have some longish speeches, but Antonius has
longer.
More.
Yes.
And longer. I mean, you do get one... No, it's not. It goes into it.
But
that's the natural logic of the scene. So you're talking about fortune, and the only thing that's durable, nothing is durable except virtue. Virtue except our never failing host. So, you know, be good. Stop falling to this sin of
if you can't
pride
be good,
and
be
spare.
Careful.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's that like final those two words that spread into my next line. You know, resist mishap, and I just follow the thought on. Alas, he is too strong. Mishaps oft times are by some comfort born, but these are me whose weights oppress my heart too heavy. Lie, no hope can them relieve. There rests no more but that with cruel blade for lingering death a hasty way be made. And we're into the suicide, people.
Caesar, as heir unto his father's state, so will his father's goodness imitate. To you, ward, whom he knows allied in blood, allied in marriage, ruling equally the empire with him, and with him making war, have purged the earth of Caesar's murderers. You into portions parted have the world, even like co-heirs their heritages part, and now with one accord so many years, in quiet peace, both have your charges ruled.
So it's not that bad, you know, we can still turn this around. I think that's what you're saying. It's, of course, bollocks.
Well, quite.
I mean, Antony is clearly marked for death, whatever happens here. So, you know, he either wins or he dies. So, you know, you're trying to talk him around from suicide.
The rules of politics, which haven't changed in millennia.
No, absolutely. I mean, he's made his choice. And, you know, now it's either suicide or victory. And I think the victory is past. Blood and alliance nothing do prevail to cool the thirst of hot ambitious breasts. The son his father hardly can endure, brother his brother in one common realm. He's not got a very cheerful idea of what filial duty is, has he?
Yeah.
So, you know, you've made this argument, Caesar, you did such great things together, and going, yeah, it means nothing. It means nothing. When it comes to power. So fervent this desire to command, such jealousy it kindleth in our hearts. Sooner will men permit another should love her they love than wear the crown they wear. All laws it breaks, turns all things upside down. Amity, kindred, naught so holy is, but it defiles a monarchy to gain. None cares which way, so he may it obtain.
Suppose he monarch be, and that this world no more acknowledge sundry emperors, that Rome him only fear, and that he join the east with west, and both at once do rule, why should he not permit you peaceably, discharged of charge and empire's dignity, private to live for reading philosophy, in learned Greece, Spain, Asia, any land?
God, you're a simple soul, aren't you?
I think he's a straightforward soldier. He's not a politician.
Oh, yeah, but I kind of think a soldier wouldn't be that innocent either.
No, lions led by donkeys?
Yeah, no. I feel like is he lying? Or is he just naive? Interesting. It's I just don't see anyone being that naive. You know, you'll be allowed to be a private citizen. Like that has ever happened.
Well, I'm thinking of who was the philosopher who Julius Caesar effectively had the major clashes with?
Was that Cicero?
Yes. You know, who again expressed similar sorts of views, and Cicero
was not.
He didn't
lead an armed revolt.
No, but. He was pretty well accused all but.
Yeah. Don't recall him coming to a good end, though.
No, he didn't.
No. that's not winning the the country point. Anyway. Never will he his empire think assured while in this world Mark Antony shall live. Sleepless suspicion, pale distrust, cold fear, always to princes company to bear. Bread of reports, reports which night and day, perpetual guests from court, go not away.
He hath not slain your brother Lucius, nor shortened hath the age of Lepidus. albeit both into his hands were fallen, and he, with wrath against them both inflamed, yet one, as lord, in quiet rest doth bear the greatest sway in great Iberia. The other, with his gentle prince, retains of highest priests the sacred dignity.
He fears not them, their feeble force he knows. He's already clipped their wings.
He fears no vanquished, overfilled with woes.
Fortune may change again.
A downcast foe can hardly rise, which once is brought so low.
All that I can is done, for last assay, when all means failed, I to entreaty fell. O coward creature, whence again repulsed of combat, I unto him proffer made, though he in prime and I by feeble age mightily weakened both in force and skill. It could not he his coward heart advance, basely afraid to try so praiseful chance. This makes me plain, makes me myself accuse. Fortune in this her spiteful force doth use, gainst my grey hairs in this unhappy eye. Repine at heavens in my haps pitiless. A man, a woman, both in might and mind, in Mars his school, who never lesson learned, should me repulse, chase, overthrow, destroy, me of such fame being to so low an ebb. Alcides' blood, who from my infancy with happy prowess crowned, have my praise. Witness thou, Gaul unused to servile yoke, thou valiant Spain, you fields of Thessaly, with millions of mourning cries bewailed, twice watered now with blood of Italy.
Witness may Afrique, and of conquered world, all four quarters witness may be, for in what part of earth inhabited, hungrier praise have you not ensigns spread?
Thou knowest, rich Egypt, Egypt of my dreams, fair and foul subject, Egypt, ah, thou knowest how I behaved me fighting for thy king when I regained him from his his rebellious realm against his foes in battle showing force, and after fight in victory remorse. Yet if to bring my glory to the ground, fortune had made me overthrown by one of greater force or greater skill than I, one of those captains feared so of old, Camille Marcellus, worthy Scipio, this late great Caesar, honour of our state, or that great Pompey, aged, grown in arms, that after harvest of a world of men, made in 100 battles, fights, assaults, my body through pierced with push of pike, had vomited my blood, in blood my life, in midst of millions, fellows in my fall. The less her wrong, the less should be my woe. Nor she should pain, nor I complain me so. No, no, whereas I should have died in arms and vanquished off new armies should have armed, new battles given and rather lost with me, all this whole world submitted unto me, a man who never saw in laced pikes with bristled points against his stomach bent, who fears the field and hides him cowardly, dead at every noise that soldiers make. His virtue, fraud, deceit, malicious guile, his arms, the arts that false Ulysses used, known at Modena, where... Modena?
Modena.
Yeah, known at Modena, where the consuls both death-wounded were and wounded by his men to get their army, war with it to make against his faith, against his country soil of Lepidus, which to his succour came to honour whom he was by duty bound, the empire he usurped, corrupting first with baits and bribes the most part of his men, yet me hath overcome and made his prey, and state of Rome with me hath overcome. Strange! One disordered act at Actium the earth subdued, my glory hath obscured, for since, as one whom heaven's wrath attaints with fury caught, and more than furious vexed with my evils, I never more had care, my army is lost, or lost my name to repair, I did no more resist.
And pause.
Yes. On the huge amounts to unpack from that massive speech.
On the first line.
Yes.
What's the last word you got in the first line?
Deeds.
All right, because you didn't say deed.
Did I not say deed? No, I'm sure I've cocked up in many places.
I think dreams was what you said.
Oh, right. But, Egypt of my deeds. Yes, it does sound like something I'd say wrong. That's good to know. It's really interesting how he spits scorn at Caesar as being an unfighty man.
Yes.
Doing everything by politics. He's afraid of the field. So again, this concept of being a very manly man and what is, what that means. And somehow Caesar is an unmanly person. I don't know if he actually uses that word a lot. I'm possibly projecting modern discourse on it slightly. Antony talking a bit about how, wouldn't it have been better if he died in battle rather than this sort of rather pitiful end? It's not the kind of end he envisaged. I get massive speech. It sort of worked, though. I didn't feel like it was dragging. I was overforcingly the pace, because we're not really supposed to be looking at Mark Antony.
I think the thing is that it is this torrent of words.
Yeah.
And I think that, in some ways, is actually showing the mental stress that he's in, because effectively...
Yes, it's all obsessive detail and slights against him. I mean, that sense of betrayal to some degree, even though technically I suppose Antony is the betrayer of things. Well, I'm not sure who moved first. They all manoeuvred again. I mean, nobody's an innocent here.
Trying to work out which of that family did the dirty on the other is.
They're all manoeuvring.
That has been preoccupying historians for an awful long time.
Yeah, but it's this thing of old nobility, and I always find these, noble people speeches really annoying, because I just don't. When people are talking about themselves in that way, and other people are talking about how heroic and noble they are, and you're just sort of thinking, yeah, but you're also just a bit of an arse.
The difference is at least they're not wearing an old Etonian tie.
Yeah, well, separate issue. Okay, let us move towards...
Lucilius is now...
I'm afraid I have a massive speech coming up again.
Yeah, Lucilius has got a decent
chunky bits. Let's look at this first one.
Yeah.
I'll give you the half line in. I did no more resist...
All wars affairs... But battles most daily have their success, now good, now ill, and though that fortune have great force and power in every worldly thing, rule all, do all, have all things fast enchained unto the circle of a turning wheel, yet seems it more than any practice else. She doth frequent Bellona's bloody trade, and that her favour, wavering as the wind, her greatest power therein doth often show. Whence grows, we daily see, who in their youth got honour there, do lose it in their age. Vanquished by some less warlike than themselves, whom yet a meaner man shall overthrow, her use is not to lend us still her hand, but sometimes headlong back again to throw, whereby her favour she hath us extolled unto the top of highest happiness.
Build high for happiness. Do you have second line up, when or where? Whereby her favour?
Whereby.
Yeah, change that to when. I've got when here, or at least make a note. And also about third way up, got honour, change that to get honour. I mean, again, you're just arguing the same thing you've already been arguing. You're just talking about fortune again.
Yeah. Yes, I mean...
I mean, it hasn't worked so far, so why are you sticking with it? I don't know.
He's a bit of a one-track pony, this one.
He is. But it's also, he's feed for Mark Antony to go on to his next bit. It's a feed line, really, isn't it?
I mean, I think to a certain extent the structure is such that Lucilius is there to give Antony a chance to get his breath back.
Yes, get his breath back. But also so that Mark Antony's not just doing another big, massive speech of lament, which he's sort of open to play with, to make the scene a bit more dynamic and seem like it's a back and forth, even though to some degree it's not. Get a handle on the dialogue. It's a one-man show. It's a monologue. I have had a thought that I could do a conflation of characters. Because I could make it... I've seen nothing so far that will contradict this. It sort of makes a certain logic to make this the same person as Dercytus, the messenger later on, reporting Antony's death.
Yes, that would actually be logical, because it's
I'm always slightly looking for that kind of conflation of parts.
It's an association, an associate of Antony.
You should be in the room.
Reporting to Caesar.
I think that might
just work.
That might be well. We've looked at the messenger already. I will just double check that the messenger doesn't mention himself. But I think that might be a way of doubling that. Because I want to keep the cast size down. I always want to do that with anything, especially for audio, because more characters you have, the more people you need to remember, and you've got fewer signifiers to remind you who people are.
Yeah.
So it's quite useful to be able to do that. I'm thinking of doing similar with characters in Cleopatra's court as well, slightly limiting. Because there's one random person who just makes a random speech. I don't like people making one random speech in a play, and it's a real weird neoclassical thing that keeps coming up. Exposition monkeys, they're annoying. That's what the messenger later on. He's a very good exposition monkey, but he's there to deliver some exposition. And he personally has no function outside of that. Anyway. Well, aught I curse within my grieved soul, lamenting day and night this senseless love, whereby my fair enticing foe entrapped, my heedless reason could no more escape. It was not fortune's ever-changing face. Yeah, I'm not buying this fortune at all. I'm turning on you a bit now. It was not fortune's ever-changing face. It was not destiny's changeless violence forged my mishap. Alas, who doth not know they make, they mar, nor anything can do? Fortune, which men so fear, adore, detest, is but a chance whose cause unknown doth rest. Although oft times the cause is well perceived, but not the effect the same that was conceived. Pleasure, naught else, the plague of this, our life which still a thousand plagues pursue, alone hath me this strange disaster spun, fallen from a soldier to a chamberer, careless of virtue, careless of all praise. Nay, as the fatted swine in filthy mire, with glutted heart I wallowed in delights, all thought of honour trodden underfoot. So I, me, lost, for finding this sweet cup pleasing my taste, unwise I drunk my fill, and through the sweetness of that poison's power, by steps I drove my former wits astray. I made my friends offended, me forsake. I helped my foes against myself to rise. I robbed my subject. Maybe the stress should be on the eye. I made my friends offended, me forsake. I helped my foes against myself to rise. I robbed my subject, and for followers, I saw myself beset with flatterers. Mine idle arms fair wrought with spider's work. My scattered men without their insides strayed. Caesar, meanwhile, who never would have dared to cope with me suddenly despised, took heart to fight, and hoped for victory on one so gone who glory had foregone.
So
yes, it's not fortune, it's me. It's all me.
Yeah.
Woe is me.
Yes.
And now you get your, I think, one of your longest speeches, or second longest.
Yes, and it seems he's changing his tone very slightly
here. It feels like you've just... Are you even talking to me? Let's see where it goes.
I think this is he's almost...
Calling on the gods to just wake him up.
Musing self. Enchanting pleasure, Venus' sweet delights, weaken our bodies, overcloud our sprites, trouble our reason, from our hearts outchase, all holy virtues lodging in their place. Like as the cunning fisher takes the fish, by traitor bait whereby the hook is hid, so pleasure serves to vice instead of food, to bait our souls thereon to licorice. This poison deadly is alike to all. But on great kings doth greatest outrage work. taking the royal scepters from their hands, thenceforward to be by some stranger borne, while that their people, charged with heavy loads, their flatterers pill and suck their Mary dry, not ruled but left to great men as a prey. While this fond prince himself in pleasure drowns, who hears naught, sees naught, doth naught of a king, seeming himself against himself conspired, then equal justice wandereth banished, and in her seat sits greedy tyranny. Confused disorder troubleth all estates, crimes without fear and outrages are done. Then mutinous rebellion shows her face, now hid with this, and now with that pretence, provoking enemies, which on each side enter at ease, and make them lords of all, the hurtful works of pleasure here behold.
The wolf is not so harmful to the fold, frost of the grapes to ripen, fruits the rain, as pleasure is to princes full of pain. So I'm just going to pause us there. I wanted to do that next line to see if it had any connection with what you were saying.
No, I think they're in separate universes.
Lucilia seems to be actively talking to the audience slash the gods about this person over here. He's talking about... So it's almost like you're in a spotlight and and Mark Antony's down there just...
Yeah.
It's almost actually you could be saying that over some of what Mark Antony's saying.
There's a line that I found difficult here. And about halfway down, their flatterers pill...
And suck their Mary dry. Yes, it's weird. It's weird. I've got two footnotes in this edition on that, which I'm going to look at. And I remember looking this up, and I remember going, So that's a very good note. Have you also, just two lines down, have you got pleasure or pleasures drowns?
Pleasures.
Oh, good. That's right. Their flatterers rob.
As in pillage.
Pillage. Pillage. Ah, good. Make a note, please. And suck their marrow.
That makes much more
sense. That makes sense, Dan. As opposed to just saying it quickly and hoping nobody notices I don't know what it means.
Bring on a rat.
Yeah, and I think I'd probably change that to marrow. I think suck the Mary. That's not going to... I think pillage, the pill, that could be got there. Flatterer's pill might get across, but... might be one where we fudge with the dialogue to make that work.
I would have thought their flatterer's pill and suck their marrow dry.
Yeah.
Works.
I might just expand it. You know, their flatterer's pillage and suck their marrow dry and just let the line not scan in its original sense, because otherwise I don't know if anyone has a chance. I genuinely don't know.
I think you're assuming there that someone is going to be highly analytical about every line.
True.
Whereas what we're guessing is, up to this point, Lucilius has been, true, I think, trying to ground Mark Antony, and then he just goes off on one
about the things that have driven him mad. I think that's what he's broadly about. Venus is what's done this to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Venus via Cleopatra.
Is a fairly standard trope.
Yes, it is, and it really plays to,
It's all Eve's fault.
Yeah, it's playing to that idea that Cleopatra is some sort of wanton temptress, who has brought down this great man through sex, which is bollocks. If they'd won, we wouldn't be having this argument. So anyway, I'll give you my lines in.
Yeah, sure.
But it feels like these are now...
disconnected speeches.
Well, I don't know, I think you're going to talk to him again, so I don't quite know where this all starts fitting together. Can you actually go back? Can you do their mutinous rebellion, the very end of the last six lines of your previous...
Then mutinous rebellion shows her face, now hid with this and now with that pretense, provoking enemies which on each side enter at ease and make them lords of all, the hurtful works of pleasure here behold.
The wolf is not so hurtful to the fold, frost of the grapes to ripen, fruits the rain, as pleasure is to princes full of pain.
There needs no proof but by the Syrian king, on whom that monster woeful rack did bring.
There needs no proof but by unhappy I, who lost my empire, honour, life thereby.
Yet hath this ill so much the greater force, as scarcely any do against it stand. No, not the demigods the old world knew, who all subdued could pleasure's power subdue. Great Hercules, Hercules once that was wonder of earth and heaven, matchless in might, whom Antaeus, Lycus, Geryon overcame, who drew from hell the triple-headed dog, whom Hydra killed, vanquished Achilleus, whom heaven's weight on his strong shoulders bare, did he not captive to this passion yield, when by his captive so he was inflamed, as now yourself in Cleopatra burn, slept in her lap, her bosom kissed and kissed, with base unseemly service bought her love, spinning at distaff and with sinewy hand, winding on spindle's thread in maid's attire, his conquering club at rest on wall did hang, his bow unstringed he bent not as he used, upon his shafts the weaving spiders spun, and his hard cloak the fretting moths did pierce. The monsters free and fearless all the time, throughout the world the people did torment, and more increasing day by day, scorned his weak heart, become a mistress play.
Yes. Okay, so it becomes almost like choric, the way that we're sort of talking to each other, but we're not.
Yeah.
With that, the missing lines in the script as it currently stands. Anyway, I will now finish this off, as it's my place, so I can. In only this like Hercules am I. In this I prove me of his lineage right. In this himself his deeds I show, in this nought else my ancestor he is. But go we. Die I must, and with brave end conclusion make of all foregoing harms. Die I must. I must a noble death, a glorious death, unto my succour call. I must efface the shame of time abused. I must adorn the wanton loves I used with some courageous act, that my last day by mine own hand my spots may wash away. Come, dear Lucille. Alas, why weep you thus? This mortal lot is common to us all. We must all die, each doth in homage owe unto that god that shared the realms below. Sigh no more. Alas, appease your woes. For by your grief, my grief more eager grows. Stop crying. So, you know, but that's manly grief, so it's fine.
Yes, at which point he's actually found the courage or the resolution to
top himself. He's going to top himself, like, you know, did Hercules top himself? I can't remember.
I don't think there is. But
so when you're saying only this, like Hercules, am I? I don't know. Did he actually in what he's talking only this, like Hercules? In what is it? A gesture? Is there something? What is the this?
An object without a subject.
Yeah. Because I was waiting for it in this. And then it doesn't, because the die isn't connected. Unless I don't recall Hercules killing. Well, we can look this up later.
Should we pause it at that point?
Yes. Well, we're going to stop anyway and take a break and then go forward to the next bit. But while we're breaked, I'll have a quick look to see what happened to Hercules. That's slightly odd. That's basically, we've done a whole act.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a fair old chunk there.
Yeah, it's not a short scene.
Was that seriously an hour?
We've been doing this for 55 minutes. Yeah.
Good grief.
Yeah. I mean, it flew by.
Time flies like
news. You know, and obviously we spoke in between, so... But it's still going to be a good chunky...
It's still three quarters...
It's going to be a 20-30 minute scene.
Yeah.
You know, edited down. So, you know, that's...
But yes, I think you're right that Antony has got to be played at pace.
And Lucilius is trying to break that pace.
Well, I think...
I mean, it's all going to be dynamic. Some of it will be faster, some of it will be slower.
You've also got, I think, there a character point, which is that Mark Antony is impetuous, full of himself.
Lost.
Despairing. And basically on the edge.
Yeah.
Lucilius is the plodding soldier.
Yeah.
You know, he's,
and that's the question. We should now find out who he is.
He's a damn good adjutant.
Yeah.
But he's not a leader. But I think...
No, his argument is fairly simplistic. But that's fine, because that he's there to counterpoint the nobility and greatness of Antony, presumably. Even though we're not, in our modern, cynical way, buying it. But anyway, that, I think, is enough. Let's take a break. And finally, back to Alan Scott with the chorus, following on in real time from reading the three previous chorus sections, so we may refer to last time.
The final chorus in
of the Egyptians.
The end of Act 3.
Yes, so what happened in Act 3?
Well, basically, Act 3 is a bit of a Roman scene. So it's the last appearance of Mark Antony.
Mm-hmm.
It's pre-suicide. I can't remember off the top of my head precisely what happens in it. But basically, it's the sort of closing in of forces and stuff, and you know, bad things are coming.
So effectively, by that point, Cleopatra sent the message saying, "I'm dying, Egypt dying."
I'm assuming so, but I can't.
Which is what the call
must have happened at the beginning of the scene, because nobody enters. It's just the two people chatting. So I'm assuming that's the news. Because let me give you the sort of the last... It's basically, it's despair and die is what he's saying at the end. So, but go we, die I must, and with brave end conclusion make of all foregoing harms. Die, die I must. I think he might die. I must a noble death, a glorious death unto my succor call. So I think it's fair to say Antony's planning on a suicide.
Yes.
So that's where we leave Act 3. With a very, very interesting verse structure.
And we're back to a six-line stanza.
Well, yes, but with a different rhyming scheme. So, let's give it a crack.
Alas, with what tormenting fire us martyreth this blind desire to stay our life from flying. How ceaselessly our minds doth rack. How heavy lies upon our back this dastard fear of dying. Death rather healthful succour gives, death rather all mishaps relieves, that life upon us throweth, and ever us to death unclose, the door whereby from cureless woes our weary soul outgoeth. What goddess else more mild than she, to bury all our pain can be, what remedy more pleasing? Our painted hearts when dolor stings, and nothing rest or respite brings, what help have we more easing? Hope which to us doth comfort give, and doth our fainting hearts revive, hath not such force in anguish. For promising a vain relief, she oft us fails in midst of grief, and helpless lets us languish. But death, who call on her at need, doth never with vain semblant feed, but when then sorrow paineth, so rid their souls of all distress, who heavy weight did them oppress, that not one grief remaineth. Who fearless and with courage bold, can Acheron's face behold, which muddy water beareth, and crossing over in the way, is not amazed at Peric Grey, old rusty Charon weareth, who void of dread can look upon the dreadful shades that roam alone on banks where sound no voices, whom with her firebrands and her snakes no whit afraid Alecto makes, nor triple barking noises, who freely can himself dispose of that last hour which all must close and leave this life at pleasure, this noble freedom more esteems, and in his heart more precious deems, than crown and kingly treasure. The waves which Boreas blast turmoil, and cause with foaming fury boil, make not his heart to tremble, nor brutish broil, when with strong head a rebel people madly led against their lords assemble. Nor fearful face of tyrant wood, who breathes but threats and drinks but blood, no, nor the hand which thunder, the hand of Jove which thunder bears, and ribs of rock in sunder tears, tears mountains' sides in sunder. nor bloody Mars his butchering hands, whose lightning's desert lay the lands, whom dusty clouds to cover, from of whose armour sunbeams fly, and under them make quaking lie the plains whereon they hover. Nor yet the cruel murthering blade, warm in the moisty bowels made, of people pell-mell dying, in some great city put to sack, by savage tyrant brought to rack, at his cold mercy lying. How abject him, how base think I, who wanting courage cannot die, when need him thereto calleth, from whom the dagger drawn to kill, the cureless griefs that vex him still, for fear and faintness falleth.
I'm just going to pause us there, because after quite a lengthy discourse on the variations of death, death, dying, dying and death, all the various areas of death, the possible deaths, the big deaths, the small deaths, the people being killed in people pell-mell, and then people wanting courage to kill themselves, we slowly move towards Anthony killing himself.
Well, quite, yes.
And it's taken all that time to get there. Not some of that I really like. I'm thinking again with my modern day producer's hat of going, well, this kind of dialogue could almost be played almost underneath the previous scene, or it could be played underneath a dumb show of Anthony going through the suicide stuff.
Shadow play.
That kind of thing where this can be given a visual component rather than simply just as some people standing on stage talking. I mean, because we never see Anthony's death in this play. It gets reported in the next scene in a lengthy speech with reported speech. So there's part of me thinking, if I ever staged this would be the place to do it, so that actually the scene continues, but silent, with the chorus around talking about death. And as we get to Anthony talking about his death, the last few stanzas, where we talk about his actual death, that might be a focal point for it. Because this is infinitely cuttable. Mm. You can cut this pretty much anywhere.
I mean, one staging possibility would be, in fact, to have to almost do Anthony's suicide in shadow play behind a...
Yeah, any kind of...
Behind a sheet, while the chorus are doing this.
Well, I mean, I would just simply keep... You know, they're on stage there. The chorus are technically on stage throughout, so they're around them. I would just change the lighting, have the chorus step forward, down light on their faces, kind of, or up light on them, while the up Anthony, light, everything is all done by
dumb show,
done in dumb show, almost in silhouette.
But that was the thought I was thinking. That
but I don't think we need to necessarily, you know, create that additional architecture. I think we could just do that with lighting, and that might work. Because I see this as still being quite an intimate play.
Mm.
I don't see this being in a big space.
I don't think it needs to be overstaged.
No. I think you could do that quite simply. Or maybe not do it at all, I don't know. But I like the idea that the chorus has some more dynamic function than just saying some words.
Yeah.
Because it's a long speech, and I would trim it. I think the first opening stuff about death in general is quite good. I think it loses its thread a bit.
Yeah,
and then it pulls it back to some really quite unpleasant things. Nor yet the cruel murdering blade, warm in the moisty bowels made of people pell-mell dying. And it gets to a sort of general sense of a looted city. So again, we're returning to that theme of the Egyptians living through.
Watch out, Romans, your
death's
turn next,
everywhere.
Mate.
It's also coming for him. Mm. And it's an interesting question whether the Egyptians like Anthony or not, of course, because to some degree... He's the one who brings about their doom. Anyway, let us, with these fun asides, let us return to the final intimation.
Yes, I mean, this is,
so
this
now
is
we
where...
get an Anthony.
Yes. Oh, Anthony, with thy dear mate, both in misfortune's fortune aid, whose thoughts to death aspiring shall you protect from victor's rage, who on each side doth you engage to triumph.
In cage.
Yeah, in cage. Sorry, that was my mispronunciation. O Antony, with thy dear mate, both in misfortune's fortune aid, whose thoughts to death aspiring, shall you protect from victor's rage, who on each side doth you encage, to triumph much desiring. That Caesar may not you not offend, nought else but death can you defend, which he, his weak force derideth. And all in this round earth contained, powerless on them whom once enchained Avernus prison hideth. Great Somatic's ghost doth rest, not with infernal pain possessed, but in sweet fields detained, and old Amasis' soul likewise, and all our famous Solomise, and Walam honest reigned.
Okay, a couple of textual questions there. If you just got great Samatic's ghost doth raise. I've got where great Samatic's ghost doth raise.
Yeah, that I did. I mispronounce.
Yeah, you just went great. You didn't have a where.
I swallowed it probably slightly.
Also, Ptolemics, and all our famous Ptolemics.
Right.
Let's just go from where great.
Yeah.
Samatic.
Where great Samatic's ghost doth rest, nor with infernal pain possessed, but in sweet fields detained, and old Amias' soul likewise, and all our famous Ptolemies, that Willem on us reigned.
Is that a suggestion of that's to the monument where he's going to be buried? Is that what that's saying? Because it's we've gone into quite specific territory from O. Antony onwards.
It could be.
So is that a sort of premonition of the monument? Okay, so that's the end of the Egyptians. With some trims, I liked that. I thought that worked quite well. I think in staging terms, it can work really well with some action. I'm a bit of a fan. Okay, that's good.
And that was the text of Act 3 as part of our prep for the proper recording. There may be time to throw in your 3 cents if you have any thoughts about it. And we might change our approach for the final version. Or not. Send thoughts, suggestions, clarifications, and passive-aggressive abuse either on our Patreon page by joining us or on Twitter at BeyondShakes, or you can email us at admin@beyondshakespeare.org.